Chapter 16. According to a book about the history of Whitehall, a sorcerer of somewhat questionable sanity had set out to create the most complicated game he could for budding sorcerers. In the resulting game, there were 12 players to each team, 4 different sides, and, just to confuse anyone who wasn't already, the rules changed depending on what the players were actually doing. 2 players in each team, selected randomly, were actually traitors working for a different team who could win the game by making their own side lose. Emily detested all team sports with a passion, but Ken was particularly absurd, especially considering where it was played. The arena was as dimensionally flexible as the rest of Whitehall, and massive, which meant that the players had more room to roam. And roam they did. At times, the players would throw balls from hand to hand as they ran through the marked passageways. At other times, they would jump into tubes and pop up at the other side of the arena. Being hit by a ball sent a player into the penalty box, where spectators pointed and laughed for 10 minutes, unless he happened to be carrying one of the other balls when they were hit. If he had a red ball, he was out of the game completely and was booed as they slouched out of the arena. A yellow ball meant that he had to surrender the ball they were carrying by throwing it to a player from a different team. A green ball meant that he got a free pass. Naturally, the balls changed color at random. A player might jump for a green ball and discover, too late, that he had caught a red ball. It seemed to Emily that the designer had meshed soccer, basketball, paintball, and dodgeball into a single game, played inside a climbing frame for children. Points could be scored by either putting a ball into a hoop or knocking other players into the penalty box or off the field completely. The referee was apparently allowed to award additional points for initiative, which could be as simple as picking up a ball on the ground or jinxing another player, just to force them to compete savagely against one another. No one knew what the purpose of that was, according to the history book, because the original rule book had been lost centuries ago. Emily, who remembered the football jocks from back home, suspected that it was really nothing more than legalizing something that would have happened anyway. It was as good a theory as any. Having created his rules, the sorcerer had run out of imagination and settled for naming it after himself. Ken, in the sense of knowing something rather than Barbie's boyfriend, had been played in roughly the same way ever since. And, judging by the number of watching students screaming their approval as the 4 teams fought for victory, it had remained popular up to now. "Tedious," Emeka announced, from where she was seated on the hillock. "You should read a book instead." Emily couldn't disagree. "Maybe they should play a game on broomsticks instead," she said, "with balls that knock players off their brooms, a hard place to land, and a golden hummingbird thingy that unbalances the game so much that whoever catches it is almost certain to win." Emeka gave her an odd look. "Only an untrained magician would risk flying on a broomstick. A trained magician should know just how many spells could bring a broomstick and its rider crashing out of the sky." "Oh," Emily said. "Maybe she should try to introduce that particular sport and see how it worked in real life. How do they actually tell when a given team has won?" "In a championship game, they keep playing until only one team remains in the arena," Emeka said. "Here, there's a time limit." She pointed towards a large hourglass on the edge of the playing field. "Whichever team has the most points, after adjustment for losing players and fouls, wins the match. If you manage to pull off a black horse Ken, you get feted for life." Emily blinked. "A black horse Ken?" "That's when you lose all of your players but still win on points," Emeka said. "It doesn't happen very often."
"I see," Emily said. Of course it wouldn't happen very often. A team that had been completely removed from the field would not only lose points for each player they lost, but wouldn't be making up any more points afterwards. They'd have to amass thousands of points before they were wiped out.
"Yeah," Emeka said.
"Broomsticks. Did you hear about broomstick?"
Emily gave her a sharp look. "Was that a phallic joke?"
"No," she said slowly. "Why?"
"Third-year student," Emeka explained. "She never cleaned her room, even when her roommate reminded her time and time again. They weren't earning any credits for cleanliness because she was sloppy and left clothes and half-eaten food lying everywhere, so the roommate was suffering too. Eventually, she snapped and turned broomstick into a broom."
She giggled. But the roommate didn't get the spell quite right, she continued. Broomstick took on some of the characteristics of a broom. She thought she belonged to her roommate, that she should be used to clean the room. She became completely obsessed with cleaning everything when she was finally turned back into human form. There are people who say they've seen her leaning against a wall, waiting to be used. Emily shivered. That doesn't sound very funny, she said finally. It was a thoroughly gruesome story, with implications that chilled her. What did the roommate do wrong? We all got a lecture on it when we entered Advanced Charms, Imeka said. Unlike Alassa, she had actually worked her way through Basic Charms before Emily had been enrolled at Whitehall. The roommate didn't specify that her mind should remain unaffected, because she didn't think that there would be any bad effects. Not like being a frog for an hour and then catching yourself trying to snap flies out of the air with your tongue for the next week. So the unexplored variable affected her mind. Good God, Emily said. And that is considered a harmless prank? No, Imeka said, more seriously. I think that the roommate was punished severely, but Broomstick had to be left to recover on her own. The druids couldn't actually do much for her without making the problem worse. A cheer rose up from the direction of the stands as one of the players scored a goal, winning 10 points for his team. Two other players converged on him and threw balls at the same moment, forcing him to duck and cast a charm to shield himself. The rule stated that shielding charms could not be maintained for longer than 10 seconds, every 5 minutes, or the unfortunate player would spend time in the penalty box. Emily rolled her eyes as the spectators counted upwards gleefully, just before the charm was dispelled with 2 seconds to spare. Imeka coughed, possibly sensing that Emily found the topic of mental changes caused by transfiguration uncomfortable. I practiced with your numbers, she said, holding up a sheet of paper. And with your accounting system, my father is going to love them. Emily took the sheet of paper and scanned it quickly. She had come up with the idea of double-entry bookkeeping when she'd realized that Imeka, a merchant's daughter, had never heard of it, but she hadn't realized that her world didn't have Arabic-style numerals until she'd seen Imeka's first page of accounts. Her father had given Imeka a small allowance, and, she'd reluctantly admitted, he expected her to justify everything she bought. Emily had written out the numbers she recalled from her home world and taught Imeka how to use them. 2-3 was a great deal simpler than something comparable to XXIII, and that was a relatively simple example. Who would have thought that medieval accounting required an entire accounting guild, because even the educated classes had trouble with numbers? Tell him about them, Emily suggested. It was an idea she couldn't copyright, but it would help convince Imeka's father that she was a source of other, more profitable ideas. And why don't you mention the other idea to him at the same time? Imeka flushed. I'll have to see what he says, she said finally. He may have to start hiring tailors if he wants to produce clothes for the shop. Emily smiled. The concept of mass production didn't exist in this world either, allowing her a chance to outline it for someone who might listen. Instead of a number of highly skilled craftsmen, have a larger number of workers producing goods piece by piece, she'd suggested, wishing that she'd listened more carefully when it had been mentioned back home. She was sure that there was more to it than that. No doubt someone with money involved, once he had the basic idea, would expand upon it. Tailors might no longer have to sell their wares directly if they went into partnership with merchants. There was another roar from the spectators, and Emily rolled her eyes. One of the other tricks woven into the arena was a spell that allowed the watchers to follow the action perfectly, no matter how far they were from the wards that marked the edge of the playing field. Apparently, leaving the playing field without permission counted as being sent off, leaving players trying to trick their opponents into crossing the wards. But she had to admit that she wasn't really interested in Ken. It wasn't something she'd be good at doing. All the school stories she'd read had always made the main character into a sporting prodigy, but it didn't work that way in real life. Or maybe there was a point to Ken that hadn't been mentioned in the book. Players of the game tended to think very quickly and to react and cast spells without needing to pause and concentrate. The allied lands were at war, as hard as it was to imagine, with the sun shining down from high overhead, casting long rays of light over the nearby mountain peaks. And they needed fighting magicians more than they needed sports stars. Come on, Emily said. She stood. Let's go visit the animals. Whitehall's grounds changed without warning. Every time she looked out of the windows, she saw something different. There was so much magic soaked into the castle that it had a remarkable effect on its surroundings. If it hadn't been for the amulet Madame Raz had given her, Emily knew that she wouldn't have been able to find her way around at all. What would happen, she asked as they walked, if the spells keeping the school stable were to collapse? Emeka considered it. A pocket dimension would either snap out of existence or explode everything inside it back into the normal world, she said. I wanted a chance to study dimensional engineering. Professor Theta said that a trained dimensional wizard could earn a living almost anywhere, but I would have to undertake 3 years of study first. He also said that if you knew the coordinates of the dimension, you could open and close the gateway at will without anchoring it to something in our world. Emily sorted it out in her mind. Whitehall was so vast, bigger than the TARDIS, she suspected, that if the spells did collapse, the entire surrounding countryside would be completely wrecked. She'd wondered why Whitehall was so isolated from the rest of the Allied lands, and would still have been isolated even if the necromancers didn't exist. But perhaps that was the reason. If the school were to be destroyed, the danger to innocent bystanders would be minimized. They walked through a miniature village, without any discernible purpose, as far as Emily could tell, and into the garden of the stoned philosophers. Emily had been told that students who kept talking in the library, despite spending an hour as a statue for each offense, were eventually transfigured permanently and placed in the garden as a warning to their successors. She really hoped that it was a joke. Looking at the statues, they all seemed to be of older men rather than the students she knew. It was probably a joke. That statue always gives me the creeps, Emeka admitted, pointing to one that stood on its own in the center of the garden. It was a statue of an angel, with hands covering its face. Emily looked at it and recalled the entities she'd seen as Shade's prisoner and helpless sacrifice. There was something about the statue that made her reluctant to look away from it. She found her voice. What is it? No one knows, Emeka said. She looked down at the grass below their feet. They say that there are magical creatures out there that we have never catalogued because no one ever returns to report their existence. You, a voice snapped. Emily glanced up sharply. Alassa was walking out of the trees that had concealed her presence, accompanied by two of her cronies. All three of them were holding wands. Do you know what you did to me? Emily glared at her, feeling rage burning through her mind. Do you know what you did to me? Alassa brandished her wand, threateningly. Emily hesitated. Using a wand was a sign that the carrier was not a skilled magician, but it didn't mean that the carrier wasn't a strong magician, and she had never been allowed to use a wand. She hadn't seen Aloha use one either, and her roommate was aiming to become a combat sorceress. Sparks snapped out of the tip of Alassa's wand, but Emily held her ground. There was no way that she was going to back down in front of the royal bully. I gave you what you deserved, you insufferable commoner, Alassa snapped. You... Words failed her as Emily stared at her in disbelief, followed by slow-burning horror. Alassa would have been raised to know, with every inch of her being, that she was born to rule, and that those who happened to be common-born were her servants. She wasn't allowed to doubt that, not even slightly, and it would provide a justification for anything she wanted to do. No, she wouldn't even bother with a justification. The sense of her own superiority was too strong to need to convince herself of the rightness of her own actions. It was wrong. It was completely wrong. It was so wrong as to be unquestionably wrong. And it was so fundamentally wrong that Emily had difficulty in coming up with an explanation of why it was wrong. Alassa's hand moved and a spell lashed out towards Emily. It struck Emily's protective wards and bounced off, magic crackling around her skin before it faded away into the background mana. Emily started to cast a spell of her own, a freeze charm she'd memorized for emergencies, only to see it deflected away by one of Alassa's cronies. A second later, Alassa hit her with a second spell. Emily's wards were torn away. Alassa's third spell slammed into Emily's unprotected body. She tried to open her mouth, but an eerie tingle spread over her body and the world began to blur. Alessa's spell seemed to grow stronger as the world shrank, somehow dislocating Emily's mind from her body. It was suddenly very hard to hear anything. It struck her, in a flash of pure terror, that Alessa had transfigured her into something small and immobile. Emeka's words came back to her, and she wondered if she was about to become convinced that she was a broom or something worse. But Alessa could only cast spells she'd memorized. No one would have taught her a flawed spell. At least Emily hoped that was the case. Someone might have given Alessa a useless spell in the hopes it would give her bad habits, but that thought was too terrifying to contemplate. The world had faded into a confused mass of impressions. Perhaps she no longer had eyes, so how could she see? But Emily definitely saw something. Alessa and her cronies were advancing on Emeka, intending to teach the common-born girl a nasty lesson for daring to befriend someone who might help her to stand up for herself. Words came to her as though she was hearing them through water. Alessa threatening, Emeka pleading. She sounded terrified. Alessa would tease and torment Emeka, and then Alessa would do whatever she wanted to a helpless girl. Pure rage boiled through Emily's mind as she struggled with the spell Alessa had cast on her. It should have been easy to shape a dispelling charm, but it was so hard to think clearly with her thoughts slowly blurring into a daze. A human mind had to be dislocated if its body were to be transformed, she realized, as she struggled to counter Alessa's spell. The alternative was what had happened to poor Broomstick. Emeka screamed. Emily threw caution to the winds, blasting Alessa's spell with all the mana she could summon and direct. The spell simply melted away while the world spun crazily around Emily as she snapped back into her human form. Somehow, the rage made it easier to hold on to her magic. Her eyes returned to normal. She clearly saw that Emeka's face was bruised. She'd been slapped hard, and she'd been so terrified that she hadn't even tried to defend herself. Alessa turned, raising her wand even as her face was twisted by horrified disbelief. Emily's rage was making it hard to think. She found two spells in her mind, spells she'd memorized that were both intended to stop a bully in her tracks. She hesitated, just for a second too long. Which one should she pick? Alessa started to cast another spell. Emily sensed the surge of magic and knew that her time had run out. Frantically, she tried to cast both spells at once. Mana flared through her body, sending her staggering to her knees. She heard very dimly someone screaming in pain. Alessa? Or was Emily screaming herself? She squeezed her eyes shut as blinding light burned at her eyelids. Her head hurt, as if she'd been violently sick inside her own mind, or taken something that had intoxicated her. She managed to open her eyes, then recoiled in horror. Alessa lay, stunned on the ground in front of her, and her lower jaw was warped and twisted into eerie yellow stone.